You're listening to Radical Philosophy at 8:55 a.m. This is Susan Wolfe from the University of North Carolina.
So glad you tuned into Radical Philosophy. I'm your host, Beth Matthews. Today on the program, I'm going to be speaking with Chris Sicker about radical lesbian philosophy. Now, Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Beth. Hi.
Hi. Now, could you tell us about the radical lesbian group that was formed in Melbourne in 1973?
Yes, I can, because I was there. It was a long time ago. What's that, 53 years ago now? In 1973, I came out as a lesbian, and I started hanging out. There were no lesbian groups. I started hanging out at Gay Liberation. It was called the Gay Liberation Front. And there was a women's group there. So I joined the gay women's group, and we were having meetings in the centre that they had there in Carlton. And we had a lot of discussions, and after a while we decided that the men were too sexist, because we were very influenced by women's liberation at the time. And we decided that we, instead of being a gay women's group as part of Gay Liberation, we would form our own lesbian group, and we decided to call it the Radical Lesbians. So after that, we didn't meet in the Gay Lib Centre. I think we probably met in each other's homes, and that was how the group was formed.
How big was the group?
Well, it was only a small group of women then. It was probably in the beginning, maybe 8 or 10. It's hard to remember, so long ago. It did expand as we started drawing more lesbians into the group, but it was a very small group because really there was no visibility at the time, no public visibility. So it was very hard for anyone to even know we existed and join the group until we started trying to pull more lesbians in.
So what did the group do?
Well, it had quite a few things that it did. In fact, we were very busy. It was a 24/7 group. We were basically on the go every day, all day and all night, because one of the things we did, I guess you'd call it public education, i.e. making lesbians visible in a society in which even the word wasn't known to many people, the concept wasn't known to many people, including lesbians themselves didn't even know they existed. they just would know they were attracted to a woman, and that somehow that didn't fit in to the very predominant heterosexual world. So one of the ways we sort of got the word out, we had to do public actions. We produced leaflets. Spray painting was a big deal. We'd go around and spray signs like "Lesbians are lovely." And actually the "Lesbians are lovely" sign, which was the first one that was done by one of our members, has become quite famous. And the photo of four of us standing in front of the sign has been bought by the National Gallery of Victoria. It was taken by Ponch Hawkes, and it's featured in a big exhibition they called Queer that they had a couple of years ago, and a postcard's been made. And so it's probably the most visible, you know, remnant of our radical lesbian group. So it was, of course, very controversial to have the word lesbian and lesbians are lovely and things like that spray painted around. It was only inner city Melbourne, but it got through into the mainstream press, because they weren't even allowed to use the word lesbian because it was such a bad word at the time. So, but we also wrote leaflets and produced leaflets, and we'd go to demonstrations and at universities hand out our leaflets. We participated in actions like kissing in the city square, where gay men and lesbians would go and publicly kiss each other. That caused a big stir at the time. So that was, a lot of what we did. We were also allied with women's liberation, and that was part of why we left gay lib, we identified more with women's liberation than gay liberation, or we were all very active in women's liberation as well. And so, we were then wanting to create a theory of lesbianism. So, and it was very much based in women's liberation ideas, and that, you know, and it was all being developed at the time. So, and of course, I guess one of the big functions of the group, which I hadn't thought of at first, was for us to develop a sense of pride in ourselves as lesbians and have a positive feeling about being a lesbian, because up until then there was no such, you know, we weren't even visible, and most lesbians, I'd say almost all, felt some kind of shame or at least defensiveness about being lesbian. So, and as part of the creation of this new theory, or let's maybe we could call it philosophy of lesbian, we also decided to have a conference, a national lesbian conference, which took place in 1973. So we sent out letters to lesbians that we knew of in other states of Australia. I didn't make it as far as Queensland and Western Australia, but we had women come from Adelaide and from Sydney, and quite, you know, the bulk of women from Melbourne. And we reached a huge number, it seemed to us at the time, 60. Up until that moment, we had no idea that there was such a large number of lesbians as 60 existing. So it was pretty amazing to have 60 lesbians together in one place. And so we had this conference, and we presented papers at the conference, like, because a lot of the women in the group were, you know, sort of university intellectual types, and when you had a conference, you did a paper. So we did that, and we discussed a whole lot of things, and I've just got a little list here of the some of the papers. So one was on primary relationships. It was about what is a primary relationship and how should we go? So, of course, the model was the heterosexual relationship, in which, you know, men played masculine role, women a feminine role, and it was monogamous, and it was the man had ownership of the woman. So, of course, we were, with our feminist philosophy, we were coming to, you know, from the point of view where we should have equal relationships, which we believed was only possible between women, because there was a power relationship between men and women. So that was quite a radical idea.
I'll just tell you a funny incident that happened to me. And I mean, I think that most of us lesbians have experienced this, because sometimes straight people will say, who's the man and who's the woman in the relationship? And a straight friend of mine, I was showing her that myself and my partner had bought two new bikes, push bikes. And, well, obviously because my partner was quite a bit taller than me, she actually got the man's bike and I got the woman's bike. And when my friend noticed this, she said, do you feel like the woman in the relationship, and does Michelle feel like the man? And I said, well, only when we're on our bikes.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, up until the radical lesbians started piping up in public, there was a subculture of lesbians. To be honest, most lesbians never found any sort of group of belonging. Occasionally they might find one or two other couples. But where there were actual bars, which there wasn't one in Melbourne at the time, there was one in Sydney. I can't remember exactly when it started. But basically, if you talk to older lesbians who were lesbians in the 1950s and 60s, it was very much you had to role play. You had to decide whether you were butch or femme. And then if you went to one of these bars, or you went to some party, or, you know, sometimes they got together with a little group of gay men too, there would be a social group. So one had to be male, one had to be female, and that was the way they conducted relationships. So when the radical lesbians started appearing in some of these social settings and public settings, and we were very much against sex role stereotyping, we called it at the time, and we dressed in, you know, old army fatigues and overalls, and you know, and that I guess there was a little bit of, you know, it was very conservative times when women still wore hats and gloves when they went out shopping or to church or something, and then to run around in overalls was very radical. But the hippies, of course, had been wearing weird clothes, let's say. And, we'd grown up. I was 21 at the time in 1973. I'd grown up as a teenager during the hippie era and the radical left revolutionary era. So I was used to wearing pants and, you know, patchy things and whatever. But, so a lot of those old-time, let's call them the old-time lesbians, felt threatened by us, and they didn't like us when we came if there was an event and we were there, because we weren't doing this butch and femme role-playing thing, and they found that very confronting. And you might say that now it's easier to, you know, just dress how you want, but I still notice when I meet young lesbians, which I do from, can think of some from China, some from India, Taiwan that I've met recently, they still do that male and female way of coupling. You know, they haven't sort of, and I guess some of the social things that are going on now reinforcing that kind of, but we never wore makeup, and, you know, it was very radical. So that was part of when we had, I was talking about the primary relationships paper, you know, that we wanted to break down the role stereotyping. I'll just mention some of the other papers we had. We were talking about feminist culture, creating a new feminist culture. And we decided we needed to look at history and find lesbians in history, find women in history. And so we started looking at culture, and we actually wrote a radical lesbian manifesto of all our, you know, beliefs, which is possibly accessible somewhere. I was looking for the papers this morning. I couldn't find them, but I do have them somewhere on a computer. Yeah, so that was sort of what we were doing.
So were you making lesbians visible to both themselves and society at large?
Well, we were hoping to. Like I said, I mean, I myself grew up not knowing there was such a thing as a lesbian. I just started to realise there might be when gay liberation started a couple of years before, and it had some publicity because our ways of knowing things were very limited at the time. So if it wasn't on the television, it wasn't in the newspaper, how did you even find out? But we came from being invisible to creating a visibility, and we did. You know, it started filtering through into the consciousness of the larger world that there were lesbians, because a lot of people had a concept there might be gay men who were in theatre or the arts, but a lot of people didn't really know lesbians existed. So we created that visibility. We decided to use the word lesbian, and we came out and we went on television and we went on interviews and whatever. We did sort of then bring that idea of being lesbian into the public consciousness. Now, it probably took quite a few decades before it really became something that a normal or ordinary straight person even knew about. And we started small, but I think that we did break the barrier of having lesbians visible in society.
And you're listening to Radio 3CR, 855 on your AM dial. And you're listening to Radical Philosophy. And I'm speaking with Chris Sitka at the moment about the philosophy of lesbianism. So, Chris, what is the philosophy of lesbianism?
Well, I guess a branch of philosophy is how you interpret the world, one's worldview. And we were definitely changing the worldview from one in which only heterosexuality existed to one in which there were lesbians. And we were doing that in tandem with the gay liberation movement. But we were questioning the whole structure of heterosexuality. And we were creating a new theory and practice for, you know, for our way of relating to ourselves, i.e. we could be out, we could be proud. And of course, there was a lot of opposition. We you know, copped a lot of punches. I could tell you about some of the punches, actually literal punches. We were, you know, attacked in many ways, and we had to stand up to that in order to keep being out. But we did create a new way of seeing the world, even if it's just the fact that we exist and we have a right to exist. We have human rights as lesbians. We were influenced by women's liberation in that. And so we created a view in the world in which it became more possible to be lesbian, more possible to come out. I know it's still hard for some women to come out, and it's not as easy as some straight people think. There's still a lot of prejudice. But we also created a new culture of lesbianism, and that really exploded by the 1980s. There was a really, you know, dynamic, huge lesbian, you know, stratosphere within Melbourne. We would have dances and we'd get like maybe 3,000 women to them. We had bookshops, we had art galleries, we had dances, we had events in which you could go and be a lesbian and mix with other lesbians openly. And if you were brave enough, you could be out with your family, your work. You might have consequences. But we created this new way of being for lesbians, which was really freeing and liberating. It was a very exciting time, and it drew a lot of women. And I would say that whole culture was initiated by that radical lesbian group, by being the few who came out and made lesbianism visible.
You call yourself radical lesbians. Why radical and not just lesbians?
Well, we were revolutionaries. We'd grown up, like I said before, and we had roots in hippie culture, which was pretty anti, you know, society. And the revolutionary left, which had been conducting all sorts of dynamic demonstrations against capitalism and, you know, the straight culture. So, and women's liberation was also called the Women's Liberation Movement. It was a revolutionary movement which wanted total change, didn't want reform, and that's what the radical lesbians were. We didn't just want reform and assimilation. We wanted to restructure the whole of society, to destroy the patriarchy, and create a society in which women were totally liberated from all the oppressions that come with patriarchy and with heterosexual dominance. So we were creating that new culture, and we really rejected the hetero-orthodoxy in the world. And we probably, you know, changed things for straight women as well, because we were modelling a new way of relating, which was not a hierarchy with the man is the, you know, lord of the family and the woman must obey. So women, you know, through women's liberation also adopted that kind of model that the radical lesbians were, you know, and we had to come up with all these ideas. They weren't already there. We did a lot of hefty discussing so that we could create this idea. And so that's why we called ourselves radical lesbians, because we were not just lesbians who wanted, you know, to be nice and accepted and conformist. We were part of these revolutionary movements that wanted to destroy the whole. We believed that, you know, the way that the heterosexual family and marriage was created was also propping up the capitalist system, which was something we were also against.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned about marriage, because I was going to ask you what the view was on marriage, because with the vote for same-sex couples to be able to get married, I mean, I suppose everybody should have a choice, but it's not something that I would choose to enter into, and it's because of the power imbalance, and also once you're married, it's sort of forcing you into financial dependence on each other as well.
Yeah, well, that's right. We opposed the marriage model. I mean, we didn't even think about getting married. I mean, it was totally impossible. You know, this was a long, long time before, you know, people started thinking about gay marriage, which I would say is the more reformist, assimilist, you know, modern queer movement. We weren't into, you know, conforming and being like heterosexuals. But we certainly were opposed to marriage. We would have been opposed to it for every woman because even though people might say, well, you can have an equal dynamic in a relationship, it was based on, you know, power and possession. And so, and we just, well, apart from, it never entered our minds to want to get married. I wasn't in favour of gay marriage because, and lesbian marriage, because I saw it as being a bit too assimilist. And so, it wasn't something we discussed back in the time, and I wouldn't say that every radical lesbian who was part of that group and that conference hasn't gone on to get married, but actually I can't think of anyone that I know from that group who has got married. We certainly ended up being in more couple relationships because we were very anti-couples and, you know, monogamy, but that's why we had this thing, primary relationship. You know, you didn't put too much importance on your primary relationship because we're all sisters and we had to have strong relationship with all the sisters because there was a very strong relationship between all of us because we were supporting ourselves in each other in a very hostile time. So being together as sisters and not, you know, going off separately into little couples was, you know, very important to us at the time.
All right. Well, I think we might have a part two. What do you think?
Oh, if we can talk about it.
Oh, we can talk about it. Yeah. All right. Well, listeners, you'll have to wait. We're going to talk about it off air. So thanks so much for tuning in today. And thanks, Chris, for being on the program.
Thanks, Beth, for having me here.
And I've been speaking to Chris Sitker about radical lesbian philosophy.